Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country?
Get a new 2026 Subaru Forester with 1.9% APR financing for up to 63 months.
Easy to deal with, easy to get to. Byers Airport Subaru.
By the airport!
See dealer for details. Offer ends 3/31/26.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
Now, it was last Wednesday when we had a little reprieve from all the heavy news with the revelations from Brooklyn Beckham about his rift from his parents, David and Victoria. Much of what Brooklyn said centred around the family's treatment of his wife, Nicola Peltz, the daughter of billionaire Nelson Peltz. But who exactly is this guy who claims to be worth in excess of $1 billion and possibly close to two? He also claims to be the matchmaker between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. So how did he make his money? What kind of a man is he? What kind of a daddy-in-law will he be for Brooklyn? Well, joining me now is Lorcan Lyon, head of training at the Communications Clinic and columnist with the Sun Independent. Lorcan, good morning.
Morning.
So tell me about the genesis of Lorcan Peltz. Did he come from old money?
He didn't. No, he came from a middle-class New York background. I mean, middle-class New York was able to go to private school, so significant money there. His father had a frozen food business. He went to college, dropped out of college after a year, and then took over that with his brother and turned it into something worth much, much more. In the 70s then, was able to float it on the stock exchange and made a huge amount of money. He then, in the second stage of his career, became one of the people who was really involved in the junk bonds in New York. So that real kind of greed is good, hide debt, really,
wasn't there
really
some fella called Milliken who went to jail for his pains?
Yeah,
so, and he was an associate of Milliken's, was
yes,
he?
Yeah, so Milliken was known as the junk bond king. Milliken kind of like he got his funding for a lot of his work from Milliken. Milliken was then subsequently pardoned by Donald Trump because he had been prosecuted for some of the work that he did. And then in the third phase of his career, he became, I think, what people are calling, or he called himself anyway, an activist investor, which is effectively somebody who buys a relatively small number of shares in a company and then very aggressively gets on the board, kind of big companies who he sees to be underperforming because of, you know, bloat or lack of efficiencies, and goes in there then and increases their shareholding, and then makes a lot
so
of money off the back of that.
Basically, cut, stop the overhead or lower the overhead. That increases the profitability, that increases the share prices, and then he can get out if he wants to.
Yes, and this
with
was
a massive profit.
This was in huge companies. You know, he was on board Pepsi, Unilever, Procter & Gamble. He made an attempt then to get on the board of Disney relatively recently, tried the hostile thing there. That ultimately didn't work, and one of the reasons, or one of his critiques of Disney, he didn't like the CEO, but also one of his critiques of Disney was he didn't like the fact that there was all black superhero films and all women superhero films. He didn't see the need for things like that. So that would there brings him into that slight kind of MAGA, anti-woke culture stuff. But an incredibly wealthy individual. You know, he has a place in near Trump's in Mar-a-Lago, has a place in New York that's been called Versailles, and I think that says the kind of the aesthetic you might have there would be similar to the Donald Trump aesthetic. But he kind of grew up in that New York finance world that Donald Trump grew up in as well, kind of less well known, obviously, probably more successful in terms of his actual business dealings than Donald Trump was. But that's the kind of character there, kind of the circles that he moved in.
Now, the money, I know it's hard to get your handle on what's a billion. What does a billion buy you? It obviously buys you a Versailles-like mansion in New York or in Mar-a-Lago, whatever. But in terms of just the way he spends his money, he's generous to his kids, I believe.
Yeah, there was reports anyways. Part of the rift with the Beckhams, there was reports that one of the things that was said was that that he gives his kids or his daughter anyway $1 million a month of an allowance, and that he's critiquing the Beckhams for not doing that, not doing the same. And it probably goes to the discrepancy actually between the two, because while the Beckhams are obviously incredibly wealthy and much more significantly probably famous than the Peltzes, their money doesn't really compare. You know, the Beckhams' entire net worth between the two of them would be about $500 million. Much of that is tied up actually in their companies and their names and the branding versus the 1.something billion that Nelson Peltz has. And if you were to look at his kind of shareholdings and his ownership and his capital firms, he'd have a hell of a lot more money than that, or access to a hell of a lot more money than that. So in terms of wealth, I mean, they're we're probably as comparable to the Beckhams as the Beckhams are to the Peltz, if you know what
okay,
I mean.
Okay, so the Beckhams, in visiting them in near Mar-a-Lago, in visiting their now in-laws, could feel poor.
They would feel, yeah, comparatively so in terms of the spending power that they have and the life that they ultimately then end up leading. And obviously then there has been the split between them. And then obviously Nelson Peltz, I suppose, is probably more relevant and more significant because of his links or his ties to Donald Trump, where he has kind of ebbed and flowed in his relationship with Donald Trump in the same way a lot of the Republican establishment
might have. Now, what about the Epstein connection? What is that? Because there's supposed to be some connection between Epstein and Donald Trump. And did Peltz introduce Donald Trump to Epstein? I don't know.
No, there doesn't seem to be any indication of that. The link between Peltz and Epstein is that there was an attempt to buy New York Magazine at one point, and he was part of a 50 million conglomerate trying to buy it. Harvey Weinstein was in that, as was Epstein. There's no indication that they were friends, but again, it would give you an idea of the circles in which all of these people were moving in the time in the 80s and 90s in America.
Now, in terms of spending and conspicuous consumption, shall we say, the wedding that they hosted for their daughter, Nicola, compared to the weddings that the Beckhams had,
Well, yeah, and look, the Beckhams' wedding was in Ireland, and I suppose it would be remembered here as a very, very flashy affair, funded in many ways, I think, by Hello Magazine, mm-hmm. I think at the time, cost about $1 million overall. The Peltz-funded wedding for Brooklyn and Beckham was something like $3.5 million. So even there, again, you see the contrast and the amounts that was spent on it. There is one story, again, you never know how true these are, but that one of the reasons for the rift between the Beckhams and the Peltz is that this wedding happened on the grounds of their Florida mansion. And that Nelson Peltz got very, very angry at some of the guests for using the toilets inside rather than the outdoor toilets that he had installed for the event. So again, if that story is true, it might give you an idea of the character of some of these individuals.
I mean, he has been described, like Trump, as a bully. Maybe you have to be to win in the boardroom, I don't know, in that kind of corporate America.
Possibly, and particularly the way he has decided to go about his business, it's probably is the only way to be effective, because he's always been quite hostile in his attempts. There's a story told about how he went out for, invited the CEO of Heinz, who he ultimately ended up on the board of Not There Yet, out for dinner, spent the entire time giving out to him because it was so hard to open the little packets of ketchup, and then ended it by saying, I'm going on your board and we're going to fix your company. And ultimately he did end up on the board of Heinz. So
it's still difficult to open those little packets, yeah, so he wasn't that successful.
Yeah, you didn't fix that. Billionaires can't do much. Mm-hmm.
Now, the domestic situation, have you been reading up about that? I mean, do you have any idea what the status is of that row? I mean, is it really as Brooklyn? I mean, Brooklyn's not a very educated kid, and yet that was quite an articulately written missive that finally made it. So who wrote it, really?
Yeah, a sceptical contributor to your show may suggest that Brooklyn Beck did not write that post, that it was written by a professional and put out. And there's talks that, you know, he's now in talks for a book deal. And I think we can guess who might write that book as well. But it probably wouldn't be a young Mr. Beckham. Where that situation is, look, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. There seems to have been a rift. The other three kids have appeared. Victoria Beckham was getting a Knight of Arts Award in France recently for her fashion work. The other three kids were there with David and Victoria, and obviously he wasn't. So the split does seem to be, you know, the Peltz and Brooklyn on that side and the rest of the Beckhams on the other side.
Okay, now just back to domestic issues in the United States at the moment and what's going on in Minneapolis. Trump, it does appear, has read the tea leaves, and he's looking at Republicans particularly rebelling in some small ways and some large ways. And that's what he worries about, because he's vulnerable in the House, small margins there, and even in the Senate he's vulnerable potentially.
Yeah, the things that he seems to be having antennae out for pushback is if there seems to be a strong pushback from any Republicans in Congress, and then obviously the stock market going up and down. So on Greenland, that's what drove his comeback on Greenland, where he basically did back down, ultimately got a lot of what he wanted, but back down in his ultimate aim. And here now in Minneapolis, he's making big moves. He's bringing his border czar into Minneapolis to oversee ICE. He's getting rid of the guy who was there currently, and he has basically come out and conflicted with the view of Kirsty Noem, who basically lied about what happened.
The thing
there
is, you can find it online, and this is Bovino making a statement, and what people have done is they've taken Kirsty Noem making the same statement, literally almost word for word, just very slight variations, and you play them in tandem. So they're both saying exactly the same thing. So if Bovino gets himself fired for that statement and that attitude to, as he called him, the suspect, we call him the victim, Alex Pretty. They call him the suspect.
Yeah.
Now, if he gets fired, surely Noam should be fired as well.
Yeah, and look, she was called in for 2 hours of talks with Donald Trump and Susie Wiles, who's the chief of staff, and a few others recently. So I imagine that there will be, she will move on elsewhere. I don't think it will be dramatically done this week. I think it might be 3 or 4 weeks' time, because he will want the scene to be back and down, particularly given he went in there because he doesn't like the Democratic politicians in Minnesota. So he won't want the scene to be back and down. But that there is quite clearly a back down. Another thing that I think people should look out for, look at online, is clips of Kirsty Noam's statements of what happened in that, I don't know if we call it a shooting, if we call it an execution, whatever it was, versus what actually happened. And obviously they don't. So they're not conflicting reports. One person is telling a lie and everybody else is saying what actually happened. But I think wider, Donald Trump has shown a capacity in the last 6, 9, 12 months to push it incredibly far. But when he goes over the brink to pull back, and ultimately people then breathe a sigh of relief and they almost let him pull back. Mm. So Tim Walz, Trump has now being a more conciliatory figure, called Tim Walz, and Tim Walz did call it a productive discussion. But I don't know how productive it can be if it has to get to the point where there is that level of bad behaviour, let's call it, by ICE on the ground, and then you still let Trump walk it back. Yeah. So like Mark Carney showed where you can draw the line, and I think the rest of the Democratic establishment need to know that they have an opportunity here to cause another government shutdown based on funding coming through for Homeland Security. So they can cause another government shutdown. Yeah. I'd say they probably will.
And they won't get the blame for it, as they feared the last time, that the blame will not reside with
them. If they can make it about funding for the excesses of ICE, even though the whole deportation agenda is still somehow relatively popular with the American public, the conduct of ICE in American cities is not. So if the Democrats can make it about that, there's a government shutdown battle that if they have the stomach for it, they could potentially win.
Yeah, and the gubernatorial candidate for the Republicans in Minnesota has pulled out. He said, I cannot support the repressive and revengeful policies of the Republican Party. So he's pulled out. Anyway, we'll watch that space. Lorcan Nyhan, head of training at the Communications Clinic, columnist with the Sunday Independent. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.